96.5 The Fan, 9 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be just absolutely humid today, isn't it?
It looks like that. I was looking out the window earlier. I'm like, it feels like it looks very hot outside today.
Humid and choke on your own breath.
Yeah.
It is the All-Star break tonight, Home Run Derby. Go James Wood. That's who we're pulling for, plus 450. I know a lot of people want to see the big dumper get completely annihilated in this situation where it comes to like hitting home runs, hitting bombs, hitting a lot of them. 26 and a half, I think, is the number that we said was the total of the most home runs in the first round by any player. Look, if he goes in there and hits like 35 home runs in the first round, he didn't have to do anything the rest of the night. He put on a show. Goodbye.
Mm-hmm.
But we will talk about what was this weekend for the Royals real quick, and then what that means moving forward for them the rest of the year. 97 games in, they're 47-50. They're third in the Central. They're 4.5 games out of the wild card with Minnesota, LA, Texas, Tampa all ahead of them. You will play all of those teams in the second half. New York, Boston, and Seattle, they own the wild card spots right now, and the division winners, Detroit, Houston, Toronto. I think Detroit and Houston will obviously run away with those divisions. I think Toronto will have their hands full all year with everybody seemingly in the AL East in the playoffs, which is crazy. But I think the topic of Monday after the weekend is not the fact that they lost 2 out of 3, not the fact that, you know, Nick Lofton does it again or what it may be. But I think the conversation was whatever had everybody talking, which was Saturday's game where Bobby Witt Jr. was called out by review in New York. And for us who talked about this earlier, there was no fight in anything whatsoever. And I know there's a lot of people that probably listen to Vern's postgame show where Vern's like, well, what's he supposed to do? Right? Is he supposed to get mad at the people in New York that got it wrong or got it right? Bobby technically came off the bag and got tagged. He's out. That's the rule. He's out. Okay. I can hear Vern saying that nonstop in my head. But it's not necessarily about the actual call that happened, but the moment where you are allowed to have your moment, right, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
How many times have you in life had things that really pissed you off, whether you're getting your car looked at an auto shop, whether you're going to a store and somebody double parks, and then all of a sudden something happens later on down the road and you blow up at the wrong moment, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that be on your spouse, your friend, your sibling, your family member, whatever it may be. And it's like, where the hell does all that come from? That didn't merit that moment. That was a moment where Bobby Witt Jr., it was reviewed, he was out, the replay system worked for what it's used for. I understand that. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be mad at the necessarily call, but that you just had enough of this type of blank.
Right.
And I thought that was a moment where Q could have ran out of the dugout, gave the umpires 2 cents. The umpire could have been like, this wasn't my call. He's like, but you called him safe, and these idiots up north, this is F and BS, blah, blah, blah. Q, you're gone. Okay, that just lets me know that's a lot of boiled up frustration, that this was a moment in which I'm allowing him to have that moment because, yeah, I don't like the way the call went. It doesn't necessarily mean that it was the call on the field at that moment that he is arguing about, just more so just frustration. Jack Caglione being the most unluckiest hitter in baseball since he's been called up. The stats can prove that. I can read them later from Jake Eisenberg. Bobby Witt Jr. not making the All-Star game as a starter. Jacob Wilson. Stuff like that. That's like stubbing your toe. Then getting in your car. Oh, I've got a flat tire. Then you go here. And then eventually you just can't take anymore.
Right.
And you just explode. But you need to have that in a moment in which it is necessary for. And there's half of the audience that thinks that he shouldn't have done anything, which I think is crazy. And then there's the other half of the audience is like, you know, I'm into this. I think if this is a situation in which you are allowed to have that moment, go have it. Go hit your shower. Know that everybody in that bullpen or that dugout still has your back, but just knows that the frustration has piled up and you're just ready to let some out. And then maybe you see everybody else be like, damn. Good to see Q do that. But I also would have liked to see maybe Bobby do that. I know that's not his thing. That's not his swag. He's more of a cool, complex, quiet guy. But boy, it would have been great to see Bobby kind of lose his lid a little bit. And again, show the frustration that has been this up and down season at a 47-50 record.
Well, and that's the thing. That was the perfect moment for Q to show that he was angry. You know, you don't do it all the time. It doesn't hold weight. Nobody buys into it if you're doing it all the time. You know, you ever work with somebody who yells and screams all the time? I did for a while, and it was not fun. Every day it was something else. And eventually it just kind of wears off and you don't listen to it anymore. Q's not that type of guy. And I think the most successful coaches in professional professional sports and high-level collegiate sports, you know, they're usually that cool, calm, and collected. But when they react and they go crazy and they go berserk, it means something. You have to pick and choose those circumstances. You don't do it every day. Q had that perfect opportunity to be that guy on Saturday after that Bobby Witt call, and he chose not to be that guy. And that's not Bob Fesco saying that. Even the Mets broadcast that I was watching on Saturday was saying that. Ron Darling was like, oh, regardless of, you know what happens here, this is probably going to be Q's last pitch anyway, because he should go out there and argue this call. You're not arguing against the call. You're not arguing the people in New York. That was the moment where the frustration had finally boiled over. You see it on the basketball court all the time. Coaches get a technical foul, and you're like, what the hell did he get a technical foul there? And it motivates his team. It moves his team in the right direction. It shows he's got their back. And Q had that opportunity on Saturday to show everybody about the frustration, because at that point in time, you got your teeth kicked in on Friday night, which should have been a win. You're about ready to lose that game on Saturday. Fan interest is waning. The season is starting to slip away. That game has already slipped away. It was the perfect opportunity for the guy that's always cool, calm, and collected to go out there and show a little bit of red ass. We even see it from Andy Reid. He's cool, calm, and collected. Ned was cool, calm, and collected for the most part. But when they reacted, it sent a message, and you're like, whoa. And that right before the All-Star break in a season that is slowly slipping away from you, you had an opportunity to go out there and let all that frustration out, and you chose not to. I would have argued that call. And I'm not a big go out there and scream and yell and do all that kind of stuff, because I don't think it works if you do it a lot. But in certain moments, it carries weight. And I think that was a missed opportunity by Q on Saturday.
And the same play had kind of happened to Tyler Tolbert the night before.
Yes,
where
that was the other thing.
And because, you know, somebody had brought up, like, so crash out over the right call. I don't think that makes sense, but okay. And I responded and said, yeah, but it's a call that has so many loose ends in baseball. Like, he's safe, but then he, like, pops up because momentum, and then he's right. Not safe. It's, you know, and it's kind of similar to when the Derek Carr, Chris Jones play happened, mm-hmm. the Marcus Mariota, Derek Johnson play happened, where they're like, forward progress. You go back and look at replay and you're like, well, technically it's the right call, but it's like, yeah, but what's the call? How come it always has this sort of, like, you know, difference in when it happens at, you know, it's this because technically this, but there's also he's safe, but then he's not because it's the longevity of the play. It's like, that's the type of play where you're like, I'm tired of the BS, you know, that type of stuff. It's not a clear cut. Like, they looked at the review of ball and strike and it was a ball outside. And then Q goes out there. He's like, oh, I'm tired of this strike zone. Like, that's, yeah. It's different. Cause that was it's just one of those things, or maybe not even that. Just get your ass out of the dugout and go throw a little bit of stuff where, you know, because these managers know what they can get away with without getting ejected. And Q could have just been like, well, this is just a dumb rule. You know, I don't know. It's
no, you just go out there and you scream and yell and you show that fight. You show your players that you got their back. You show the fans that you got their back. You show management that you're still fighting tooth and nail for this ball club. And I know he is and all of that. And this is a minor blip on his managerial screen. But I think if he has to do it over again, I think he looks at that moment as that moment where sometimes you go out there and you just yell at the umpire and say, throw me out of the game right now. Throw me out of the game right now. And then the umpire ejects you and throws you out of the game. You're trying to get your team fired up. You're trying to get your crowd fired up. You're trying to, you know, do something in that moment. Again, back to the technical fouls. It seems like every time a coach in college gets one, the team kind of takes off. It's a wake-up call. It wakes up the team. Holy cow, coach is pissed. We aren't playing well. And it makes you look inside yourself. That could have been one of those frustrated moments where he's pissed at his team too. Like, why are we in this situation? We're a better team than this. And maybe that's what boils over. And that's what sends Q out there to argue. But he had that perfect moment gift wrap for him. And again, even Ron Darling and the Mets broadcast were all like, he's got to go get tossed. He's got to argue this call. If that's me, I'm arguing this call. That's a dude who pitched for 20 years in the big leagues and has been calling games for 20 years now. He's got a clue on what, you know, needs to happen during the course of a baseball game. And when the Mets broadcasters were adamant that he needed to go out there and argue this call, regardless of what the review said, that's when I was like, yeah, this is that moment where we need to see Q erupt. And we didn't.
No doubt about it. Again, it wasn't necessarily just the call. It's just the whole situation. Like, having Jazz Chisholm say he's going to slap him in the face.
Right.
Having, you know, games that happen in certain ways. Having the way the season is. And then that happens a day after what happened earlier with Tolbert with, you know, I don't know, just whatever.
Yeah,
I thought that was one of those moments where you could have just let it all out And at least people would have been like, all right, well, he showed passion, because that's what all of you want to see from the text line. But now all of you want to argue and say, well, why get mad about the wrong call? The moment of the call.
Yeah,
the moment of how it happened. Like, he's safe. He's clearly there. Oh, but when he slid through the bag and his and he popped up, they got him because, you know, physical force of
physics.
Going forward.
It's science. Like, and there's nothing you can do.
I want to see passion. Well, I don't want to see passion. I want to do the really cool. Coming up on the other side, we talk about Trey Smith's deadline plus predictions of the AFC West, all here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City Sports.
Fesco and Dusty, subscribe and watch the show on YouTube by going to our channel at The Fan 96.5, Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Player under a franchise tag in the NFL just so happens to be in Kansas City. Of course, right? Like, am I the only one to think that? Like, of course, there's nobody else under a franchise tag.
That's crazy,
the only one,
right?
Is Trey Smith, who has until tomorrow at 3 o'clock Central Time, 4 o'clock Eastern. That's how it works, Mac. And I'll
tell you about time zones, Mac. You see, the sun moves across the sky and it.
I kind of feel bad about the East Coast people.
It sucks, man. Let me tell you, growing up as a kid, it blew. It does. I mean, like, Monday Night Football would start at 9 o'clock when I was a kid. 9 o'clock.
Imagine being a Chiefs fan on the East Coast. All right, this game's going to start at 8:25.
Imagine being any fan on the East Coast.
Sucks,
when
man.
I was at 9 o'clock is when kickoff would be. Never saw a full game then of those, Monday Night Football.
All those people on the West Side are like,
Yeah.
Exactly.
5:30 kickoff on Sunday. Couldn't ask for a better time.
I loved Mountain Time.
I was going to say Mountain Time has to be the best sports watching time zone, right?
Glorious.
It has to be. There's not many teams there, right?
Is that our poll
Denver.
Question?
Yeah, what's the best time
zone
for sports?
What's the best time zone for sports?
I think it is. Like, a lot of people will say the Pacific time zone is good.
Specific.
But it's not as good as the Mountain time zone. Like, you get games at 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. for the NFL, right? 2, 3. So by 5 o'clock, right in time to get ready for dinner and put Sunday night to bed. Mm-hmm. The games are wrapping up. Late game starts at, what, 6:30 Mountain time, over by 9:30.
I just love the name.
It's a great name. Yeah.
It's like Central. Eastern,
yeah.
West,
Pacific,
yeah, Pacific, and then it's Mountain,
yeah,
hell yeah.
But there's only like Denver, and sometimes Phoenix, depending on what time of the year, and then that is it. Or I guess is Salt Lake in the Mountain?
Yeah,
time
Salt
zone?
Lake
Salt
City,
Lake is,
I think would be
considered there. So you've got like, you know, three cities. So there's not a lot of teams in that time zone.
Yeah,
but I am envious all the time of people in Mountain time zone getting to watch those games, because the time we get up in the morning, the earlier the better for everything. And I'm a little selfish in that, but I think everybody would say the East Coast is the worst time zone for sports,
for sure.
And then you got Mountain probably number one, I would guess Pacific number two, Central three, and then East Coast number four.
I'm just thinking about those NBA playoff games on the West Coast that start at 9 here. So you're done with an NBA playoff game on the East Coast at 1 a.m.?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, who's doing that, you know?
No, I'm out.
Yeah, exactly.
I was out on Central time.
Yeah, it makes it very difficult. Uh-huh. The older you get, stay. That's why people who get older are like, I don't care about this anymore. I'm going to bed.
You
know,
sleep.
They're out. The sleep is more important than staying up. But, I mean, my dad would never let me watch a game at night. And then if you're an East Coast baseball team and you're playing on the West Coast, 10 p.m. first pitch.
Sucks.
Damn.
I used to hate the West Coast trip when I was producing Royals games. Like, yep, you got all Seattle games. Like,
yeah,
oh,
right.
I'll be home about 2:30.
And then back in those days, the only way to get the score the next day was in the newspaper. Well, those games ended so late, they were never in the paper the next day.
Dang. So how did you find out?
You didn't. You waited till the next day.
Life was tough. So Adam Schefter tweets, Chiefs have until 4 p.m. Eastern time Tuesday to sign franchise tag guard Trey Smith to a multi-year contract extension. Smith will earn $23.4 million on the franchise tag if a long-term deal cannot be completed by Tuesday's deadline. And then Nate Taylor of ESPN Now, congrats to him on the job. Trey Smith is the one lone player on the NFL's franchise tag because, of course, like, it's always something with the Chiefs, right? Yes or no that a deal gets done? Simple as that.
Okay, let me walk through this a little bit, how I'm thinking.
Let me tell you something, Mac.
During the Chris Jones stuff, there was a lot of chatter. A lot of people thought it was going to get done, right? Mm-hmm. Going to be no big deal. We're going to get it done. He may miss a day at training camp, no big deal. Fast forward opening day, Detroit Lions are on the field. He's up in the booth with two guys in JCPenney / Kohl's suits, right? This year, there's been no kind of communication whatsoever. It's been freaking silent, right? Freaking silent, man, with this Chris Jones or with this Trey Smith situation. So I'm judging it based on that. Mm-hmm. When it was loud, nothing got done. When it's quiet, maybe something will get done. So I'm optimistic that something will get done. Optimistic doesn't mean it's going to get done, though.
Yeah.
I'd like to think it does, but
I
don't know.
He's playing the whole year on the franchise tag.
I don't think that... I think that's kind of...
I think we can be spoilers, and hopefully I'm wrong, and we have some solidification of his career in Kansas City, but I have to bet $23.4 million, there's that typical NFL, the NFL, hey, that's a lot of money. You prove this, you're locked up for life.
But the other thing is, if you're Trey Smith, man, like, you're risking a lot.
It's a big risk.
There is no insurance policy with the franchise tag. That's why players hate it. Yes, he's going to get $23.5 million divided by two, and that's how much he ends up with. But that is a far cry from a big signing bonus that he would get or guaranteed money in a contract that he would get. That's why playing on that franchise tag is such a dangerous proposition for him, because if he gets injured and he misses a majority of this season, he ain't getting paid. I mean, and that sucks. So you have to follow that balancing act, right? Do I want to go out there and bet on myself? A lot of players like to do that. It's a risk. It is. It is a big time risk.
It's also a risk for the franchise. If he goes out there, doesn't get hurt, and he's a UFA,
100%.
Then all of a sudden, he has the option to get a lot more money elsewhere. Where the Chiefs are like, well, we're going to get a lot of money, but we're going to that much,
right?
I guess
exactly.
You can go play there. Then it's, you know,
you go play for Carolina and never be heard from again. But you make your money. You already got your rings. It's the perfect way to end your career. So, I see it both ways for both the franchise and for the player on the franchise tag. It's why these players hate the franchise tag. I remember when the franchise tag first came out and Reggie White left for free agency and went to, you know, Green Bay, and that was the big first free agent move in football. I remember that franchise tag as a kid thinking, man, this is really cool. You get to claim your players that you want to keep, and it's good for the fans. Yeah, it is, maybe. But it's not good for the players. And then it causes the animosity. And then you have to wonder, like, if you're Trey Smith or anybody going into that final year, and you know at the end of this year, you don't know what's going to happen at the end, where you're going to be, what's going to happen, what your job's going to be. That may change things up a little bit. So in a perfect world, you get a deal done that works for both parties in the next 24 hours, 30 hours, whatever it is, and everybody just breathes a sigh of relief. It's better for both to have a long-term deal done than to go into this season on the franchise tag for either side.
I think you're right. I think from a risk perspective, you're right. But if you're Trey Smith, the reward perspective is there. I mean,
huge.
It's huge. I mean, 23.5, you're already the highest paid interior lineman by over $2 million this season. That's what the franchise tag means for him this year. Highest paid interior lineman by over $2 million. That's not going to happen on his long-term contract. So boom, right off the bat, I'm the highest paid guard or center for 1 year. If I play well and play like I have this season or these past few seasons, and you know, you look at Trey Smith, this is a guy who's bet on himself his whole career. Blood clots, what do I have to do? I've got to keep playing football. I've got to risk my life. I've got to get through this health scare and bet on myself to be the guy and be the player that I know I can be. He's done that. So for him, I think he's going to do that again this year, make a crap ton of money, and then be the highest paid guard in the league somewhere else other than Kansas City after this season.
Yeah.
But I think for him, it does make sense. I think it does.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you're saying there at all. I'm just, when I look at stuff like this, and maybe I show my hand a little bit too much, but I'm very conservative. I'd rather have the known versus the unknown. Even though it's up to me, there's a lot of things that can happen over the course of the season that aren't up to you, right? The dude next to you steps on your ankle and you're up the creek without a paddle,
yeah,
or, you know, what? Maybe you have a bad year or something like that. So I'm always very conservative about that. I'd rather take my money up front and know what I'm going to get than to go out there and try to risk it for what? I mean, I always think about the bad. I borrow trouble, right? I think about what bad could happen as opposed to what good could potentially happen.
There is a coaching change in the NFL from Adam Schefter breaking about 29 minutes ago. Sony Electronics. They announced it is the new NFL coaches headset that will roll out for the use of all 32 teams this season. They've been designed with Sony's noise-canceling tech to block out crowd noise, isolate coaches' vocals, and operate in harsh weather conditions.
Why hasn't this been done before?
Yeah, I was really like, what? Okay.
They're already in use during preseason practices and will debut in-game during the Hall of Fame game on July 21st, where it will be really loud.
Oh, yeah.
And the conditions will be terrible.
Terrible.
So now coaches don't have an excuse when they come to Arrowhead.
Let's go. I love it. Yeah, I agree with you, Bob. I'm like, 2025, shouldn't we have
had noise-canceling headphones for 20 years. Like, shouldn't the NFL have been up on this? Like,
$1 trillion organization.
Yeah. Oh, you know what we need? Nobody can hear on the sidelines because it's so loud at stadiums. How about noise can? Nah, we don't need that.
Yeah, football's played in the winter. We probably have some for weather protection. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
20 years later, hey, we got this new technology called noise canceling. Thanks.
Block out crowd noise, isolate coach vocals, and operate in harsh weather conditions.
Were they not operating in harsh weather conditions?
Well, remember when,
stuff would go out for sure.
Something, but I mean, that's all electronics,
we had,
too.
We had tablets on the sideline before we had noise canceling headphones.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah, instant replay on tablets before. Yeah, that's
crazy. I guess
crazy.
I just assumed all along they were noise canceling headphones.
So noise you can't cancel out is preseason coach of the year is Andy Reid.
That's right.
And then by the end of the year, he'll be the lowest odds to win.
That's right. That's exactly right. So the AP, who votes on Coach of the Year, came out with their preseason award. Andy Reid got 7 out of the 8 first place votes. I don't know who got the other one. I couldn't figure that out. It wasn't somebody in the top five, which is bizarre. It was, yeah, it was not somebody in the top five of voting, and then they didn't list the rest of who voted for who or whatnot. But he took home 7 of the 8 first place votes, basically a near unanimous selection to be coach of the year. So in the preseason, everybody's smart. Everybody's got a clear sense of their mind and realizes that near unanimously, Andy Reid is the best coach of the league, right? Mm-hmm. He's the best coach going into the season. They will win, 12, 13 games. They will win their division. They will go to the playoffs, and Andy Reid won't even be in consideration for coach of the year. So he's the preseason coach of the year, then goes on and does everything he's supposed to do in the regular season, and then he won't even sniff coach of the year from the same people who voted him in as coach of the year in the preseason. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Not at all. Currently, the worst odds to win coach of the year this year, Nick Sirianni at plus 10,000. Andy Reid plus 9,000, according to DraftKings.
Mm-hmm.
The favorites to win coach of the year are Max Guy and your guy, Mike Vrabel, and then Ben Johnson. And then Duvall has third best odds, which we can get into those odds for coach of the year later on in the week. But yeah, could you imagine?
But it says Andy Reid was the most successful coach in the history of the Eagles before going to Kansas City and turning the Chiefs into a dynasty. He's the most successful coach in Kansas City Chiefs history. So he's the most successful coach in two organizations' history, and he's still active. Under Reid, the Chiefs have had 12 straight winning seasons, made 11 playoff appearances, won 9 consecutive titles, reached 5 Super Bowls in the past 6 years. Like, that sentence right there is all you need to know about Andrew Walter Reid. Reid guided the Eagles to 5 NFC title games and 1 Super Bowl. He's 4th on the career wins list with 301 victories. People want to doubt Andy Reid and whether or not the dynasty is over. The Chiefs have had 12 straight winning seasons, 11 playoff appearances, 9 consecutive West titles, and 5 Super Bowls in the past 6 years. That's just sick.
It's amazing. It's one of the best runs in sports ever.
Ever.
Any sport.
Ever.
It's insane.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the AFC West because there are odds out for who wins the AFC West. Can we agree that last year Andy Reid went 15-2, didn't win it? This year, his division is probably the best it's been since he's been the head man for the Kansas City Chiefs. And the odds for the Chiefs to win that division are the favorites at minus 115, followed by the Chargers at plus 310, Broncos at plus 330, and the Raiders at plus 1200. Broncos seem to be where all the money is being put on to win the division this year.
I think that if you're looking for long shot, if you will. I think Denver's the pick. You're not going to win any money betting the Chiefs to win the division, right? It's negative. So if you're looking for that, you know, that sneaky long shot at plus 330, I think Denver's the smart play there. I think they're the second best team in the division. So if I have to pick somebody other than the Chiefs to win it, I'm going with Denver on this one.
I think I'd have to lean if, I mean, I think there's a lot of prop bets that we'll put for futures out there with MVP. Like you could pick right now on DraftKings, you can pick MVP plus Super Bowl winner. And Mahomes and the Chiefs is, I think, at like plus 3,500. If you think Mahomes, who's
hit it,
plus 700 to win the MVP this year in the NFL. But look, I mean, the Chargers, because you talk about the sophomore season for Daniels, right? This is a sophomore season for Bo Nix. Yeah. Like, tapes out, man. Everybody knows what your tendencies are. How do you evolve to the game that's evolved to you over the last, I don't know, 5 months of the offseason that knows, hey, Denver's on our schedule. This is what Bo Nix is going to do. Chiefs obviously do their homework for the division. You have the Chargers coming back with, you know, Harbaugh again year two. Herbert had a great year last year. I think the Raiders at plus 1,200 is about right because you don't know what we're going to see with Carroll and Geno and Ash and Jeanty, but also with Brock Bowers. It's going to look like a better team. But I look at all these odds, and they're not as big as they've been in the past, right? Like the Broncos might be like plus 600 or the Chargers might be like plus 450. It's now plus 310, plus 330 for the Chargers and the Broncos to win this division. It's not like it's a slam dunk for the Chiefs to do it. And plus everybody's always wondering, can they consistently do it every single year? Andy's there, Pat's there, Travis is there year 13. I'd like to see some receipts of people in Kansas City are not taking the Chiefs and what the, and then what the reason why you would say.
Yeah.
Is it because you don't think that this team is as good as they've been in the past or whatever that reason may be? And I know it's going to be hard to find Kansas City and to not have the Chiefs winning the AFC West.
You know, it's interesting too, because we're talking about Andy Reid and you mentioned 13, you know, years with Travis Kelce, 12 straight winning season. This is year 13 now of Andy Reid. We're almost to that, you know, time that the Patriots were a dynasty, guys. We're not far away from that 20-year run. We're on year 13 already of this run, and that's what it is. It's been 13 years of really having success. It's not just the last 5 years of this dynasty. The Reid dynasty here in Kansas City is going on year 13 and very strong in those years. Every year he's had a winning season in Kansas City. Only one time did he miss the playoffs, and that was year two when they went 9-7. So you look at the totality of this thing, we're on year 13 of essentially, you know, year 20 of a dynasty that the New England Patriots had. The difference is our quarterback came here halfway through this dynasty, so we may end up with a 30-year dynasty by the time this is all said and done with Andy Reid about halfway there. I mean, when you think about it, about halfway there, right? Patrick Mahomes gives you 10 more solid years of football, you're talking about year 23 and give him a couple more. You're talking about year 25. You're talking about a 25-year dynasty, essentially, here in Kansas City. Think about this as we were talking about. We're 25 years into this century. Imagine going 25 years, another decade of the Chiefs continuing to win, how great your life is going to be, right? It's
going to be awesome,
you know, and fantastic and so, you know, really, really cool to see all of that. But if I'm betting, I would take the Broncos, except somebody put a note in there that they're hearing a lot of betting on the Denver Broncos.
A lot of money
is going to the Broncos, which tells me when the public tends to do something, I kind of shy away from that thing. I like their defense a lot in Denver. I like Bo Nix. I like their quarterback head coach combination. That defense may get a little full of themselves, though. That's got the opportunity of a unit that's walking in thinking they've already arrived, and they get their teeth kicked in fairly early in the season. I could be wrong.
Somebody says, how long into the first half of the first game will there be headset issues in the NFL?
Yes. You get the rest of the week off. Oh, of course there are. And then neither side can use their headset. It's a mess. We're talking about this. This will be the topic of preseason, right? Because you know every coach is going to be asked about the new headsets because nobody else has anything to talk about. And then it'll be a controversy in the preseason. The headsets don't work. The game will kick off Friday night because that's the first real NFL game of the season, according to the NFL. Friday night, Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil, and we'll never hear about the headsets again.
Yes. And Sony will be like, please, please, make the story go away.
It'd be like the uniforms in baseball were last year, at the beginning of the year, what a big to-do that was. And then as the season went on, nobody talked about them anymore. It will be, or the torpedo bath this year in baseball. Have we talked torpedo bath since April 15th?
Nah. dead and gone.
Biggest story in sports for a couple weeks.
For a hot minute, and it was gone. And that's when, because everybody started to say in baseball, we were using these last year. This is nothing new. Yeah. And so everybody, all right, fine, move on. But that there's always something like that. That text is great. It will be. First couple of weeks, it'll be all about the bitching and moaning about the headsets not working.
Someone says, we can have our conversation about Andy Reid only winning it once and not winning it since. Can't believe Mike Tomlin's never won Coach of the Year.
It's another one.
How many times has Tomlin won his division? Probably like five.
Probably.
Because he's ran into Cincy and Baltimore and here recently.
He's had that division has always been competitive, you know.
Yeah, you gotta win 12 games or so, though. It's tough winning 9 or 10 every year and getting that coach of
absolutely,
the year award.
Yeah. But what if they do win 12 and him and Rodgers are sitting on top of that division?
That'd be crazy.
Boy, would it be great for this show. Coming up on the other side, it is the end of the show. It is a Monday. Bob Fesco, Mac Morey, Dusty Likens here with you. We will get into what we have, which is called our brioche of the weekend. Guess what? I have two because MLB just did our station a huge favor with recognition, plus somebody won a lot of money. We'll dive into that on the other side with brioche of the weekend here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Seriously.
Does he still have the goatee?
Oh, he looks like Brad Paisley.
Oh, no.
He's got a goatee and a hat on today. Said, look like you went to a Billy Currington concert over the weekend and didn't get after it. Oh, it's a vibe, man. I'll tell you that much.
I got to look. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
dude. I kind of like it. I'm not going to lie. I think he looks hotter. Young. Yeah. Yeah, he did get hotter. There's no question about it.
He said he was afraid of shaving it because he might have a sunburn line where his goatee is.
Oh, geez. That's insane. Oh, man. Let me ask you this. And you're more into this, Mac, than maybe. Is Mac back there? I can't see. There he is. There's a terrible glare from my end here. Can somebody ask me, explain to me, maybe you guys that are into this fantasy stuff more than I am, what the hell is Juwan Jennings doing, holding out?
That's just par for the course in San Francisco for a receiver. It was Debo, it was Ayuk, and now it's Jennings. And he knows he's their number one wide receiver.
So
He's got a little bit of clout.
Number two, yeah.
Ayuk. He's number one? Ayuk, yeah.
Ayuk, yeah.
But even still, I understand he's got a little bit. He's scheduled to make $7.5 million this season, final year of his deal, wants a new deal. And I would say, why haven't we heard about this all offseason? But this is the perfect time to do it. You're getting ready to get it.
Exactly.
Timing is perfect. But I want to know, from your standpoint, is he kind of thinking highly of himself in this situation? Or is this a good holdout, for lack of a better term?
I would read it as he's calling San Francisco's bluff and he knows what he's done these last couple of years. And he would look back at the playoffs 2 years ago and be like, I was your number one option when Debo was hurt and Brandon Ayuk wasn't catching passes. You know who you were going to in the end of the games. Purdy was looking at. That was me. I've been here. You drafted me. And I think it's him calling their bluff, kind of hey, man, this window is closing and I'm in my prime. So if you want to keep me, fine. But if not, you're going to lose McCaffrey, you're going to lose Kittle. You need me. I think that's probably what he's looking at.
Yeah. I think he's probably right to do that.
We lost Debo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Debo's got, exactly. Yeah.
It's just kind of one of those, that guy? You know, it's
yes.
That's just a weird one. I wasn't right expecting that on a Monday.
I agree.
To see, Juwan Jennings is the guy that was, announcing his holdout from training camp, and he wasn't going to show up. San Francisco's in a very interesting spot. They just signed their quarterback, but as Danon Hughes always talks about, he's not a win because of guy, he's a win with guy. And so you do have to surround him. And I think these weapons understand.
Talking about Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, right. I think these weapons understand that. They're there and they make Brock Purdy better. And Jalen Hurts won without Saquon Barkley. Brock Purdy hasn't really won without anybody yet.
So you think Hurts is a win because of?
Yeah, I do. I do. He's been to 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. Guys, eventually you're going to have to wake up and say that Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback. Leads his team.
Again, good and win because of her. Just very different. Yeah, I just wouldn't. Yeah, different class. I think we'll see it this year.
Was Alex Smith a win because of? Or
for sure, no.
No.
For sure, no.
That's the class he's in. That's where they have him comped as, Alex Smith.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Who, Brock Purdy?
No,
Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
But I think I said yesterday or last week on the air, I'd have him closer to Brock Purdy than I would Patrick Mahomes.
You might have said it yesterday.
You might have said that today. But no, I mean, that's of course he's closer to Brock Purdy than Patrick Mahomes. Yeah, I don't think anybody's close to Patrick Mahomes, but that's just me. I think he's on a different planet.
Yeah, I don't think that's an insult when saying that. But yeah, good and great. I mean, how many win because of are there? Four? Five?
Five or six.
Yeah, maybe six. Yep. Yeah.
Lamar, Burrow, Pat, Herbert.
It's the same
Allen. Daniels?
Herbert, I wouldn't put on that list.
I don't know if I'd put him there, but I like
Stafford?
Yeah, maybe Stafford. Maybe it is just five.
Maybe Goff?
No, I think he's in that win.
He's got two running backs and two pretty solid wide receivers.
Yeah.
I mean, look what he had in L.A., too. All kinds of weapons. Yeah.
Very good cast.
Yeah.
I think he's probably that Alex Smithy.
Smithy.
Sort of tier as well.
Okay. Brioche
of the weekend.
Big brioche guy.
Love that. Yeah. Good take.
I'll give mine. There's two. I want to give credit where credit's due. Shout out to Cody and Gold for the Woodisons.
Woo.
For the whole week, I didn't know what the hell they were doing. Boy, did they nail it.
They did.
MLB Network, or MLB just in general, at MLB, 13.6 million followers, took a picture of Bobby Witt and the guy they picked to be the Bobby Witt impersonator and said there was a Bobby Witt Jr. lookalike contest at the Royals game yesterday. Obviously, this guy won. The picture's absolutely absurd how much this guy actually just
fell into their lap.
And the comments below are like, so this was over quickly. That's actually Bobby. So good to them. They got it done. They got a couple of defensive plays by Bobby Witt Jr. Got to see the walk-off win. A good day for our comrades over here from 10 to 2, who you'll hear in just a little bit. Alex still rocking the goatee plus a hat. I've never seen Gold wear a hat, let alone wear a goatee. He looks exactly like Brad Paisley. So maybe he'll check Cody for ticks. My other brioche of the weekend goes to what we all wish we could finally do once in our lives, and that's hit a massive parlay. Some guy did this yesterday, and I can't believe it. He bet $10 on a 15-leg MLB parlay where he just picked the money line for every game. The 15-leg parlay was plus $917,357. The $10 actually hit, and the guy won $91,745 on a $10 bet.
Brioche, I know how to make money on this. I really want to.
Brioche.
Damn.
You're going to Hawaii next week, dude, if you win that bet. Matt's buying Valvoline if he wins that bet.
Exactly. How much did he win? $91,000?
$91,745.72.
So divided by two, it's about 50 grand. Not enough to walk away, but it sets you up, man. It's a really nice payout. Yes. Yeah, you take that in a heartbeat.
Well, the government's going to take away that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like by the time you figure it out, you're about less than 50 grand, probably, but. You know
what a hit! Yeah,
I mean, seriously, yeah. What a hit! I mean, it's insanity, right?
$10 to win $91.7K.
Gosh, God, love him, man.
Just to have that feeling.
It's crazy. It was just 15 games. That we said it was just
15
money line.
The day MLB yesterday. Parlay just took the money line.
Who do you think is going to win this one? Yankees. This one. Mets.
Imagine
this one. Pirates.
Imagine him watching
this one,
that
A's.
Royals game. Yes, oh God, Stevens!
Please.
Oh yeah, the ups and downs that he probably had yesterday. It's awesome. That's cool. That's a dream. It'll never happen again. Do not bet again if you're that guy.
It's a hole in one.
Yeah, exactly. You walk off the course. You walk out of the casino. You're out after something like that.
What did it do to us?
Yeah, Mac, who do you have on your list today?
I'll go Beckers versus Clark. Two of the young up-and-comers, two of the best players in the WNBA. Beckers, 21 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. She shot really well, too. Caitlin Clark, not as good shooting percentages, but she had 14 points, 13 assists. And the Fever routed out the Wings. So that was fun. I watched a little bit of that. It was good.
Good.
Sophie Cunningham had 13 points.
There we go.
I'm going to go ahead and give it to the new referees that they were training in soccer this weekend because there was an incident on Saturday, and I've told the story earlier in the show. When we started, we had a soccer kind of tournament this weekend. It was the high school kids kind of playing not under their high school name, but their high school kids, and it was essentially to give these referees that were new an opportunity to have practice. And they sent out this list ahead of time that this is what was going to happen. The referees are here. They're learning. Bear with them. It'd be a little clunky. No big deal. This is a tournament basically for them. You're not winning anything. You're not, whole nine yards. Of course, on Saturday, we get down to it where there's parents for the game in front of us that are screaming at the referees. And I'm thinking to myself, this is why nobody wants to be an official at any level, anywhere, and why we have bad officials in Major League Baseball and in the NFL. Because nobody's getting into it anymore. And we're not able to move guys and gals up the ladder because they don't want to take the abuse from Karen that was sitting there on Saturday over at Shields screaming at referees on a penalty kick in a tournament that was taking place in July that means nothing. And the kids were basically there to facilitate games for the referees to have the opportunity to learn. Mm-hmm. And so she started yelling at the referees. And finally, one mother said, they're practicing. You know, this is practice for the referees. Just let it go. She still was after the referees. And so their game ends. Our game begins. We're switching seats out. And she says, I hope you have better officials than we did. I said, look, I said, they're here learning. She goes, well, then they ought to go back to school. Well, people like you,
you really
ruin sports for kids, and you ruin sports for the referees and everybody involved. Like, sports for the youth isn't ruined by the kids. It's ruined by the parents who seemingly can't understand that this is youth sports and your kid is not getting a scholarship. I don't care what you think about your child. They're not probably going to get a scholarship and play professionally. They're going to have something else to do. And it's July and it's noon and you're at Shields on turf and it's hot and you're screaming at referees. It makes absolutely no sense at all, especially when this tournament was essentially developed to give the referees the opportunity to learn how to be referees. So when the real season starts, they're not making the mistakes that they may have been making in these games. So I give shout out to those, you know, those kids and folks who are taking on these jobs as referees and in their first games are getting yelled at by Karen and her silver minivan her large venti, you know, 1,000-calorie drink from Starbucks.
We're trying to help you. We're trying to get better. We're here to improve.
Right.
Could you? Yeah, geez, man.
Just give us a break.
That's ridiculous.
And it was sent out ahead of time. We all knew this going in.
We warned you. We told you.
And even if you didn't know, it going in, why are you yelling at referees at a July tournament? That means nothing at the end of the day. Everybody wants to play well and do their thing, but you weren't winning trophies. You weren't getting scholarships. Nothing like that.
Right.
Janae on the text line in all caps says, "Preach, Bob."
I know, Janae. I hear you deal with every day, my dear. I know you do.
From the 913, my brioche of the week was the delicious brioche buns I used last night for my brats.
There you go.
Been trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Smash.
That's where the whole conversation and the bit started. We all went to IV and got the brioche buns. Like, that was so good this week. Wait a minute.
Yeah, brioche bun makes the difference. Yeah, it was brioche, man.
Home Run Derby tonight. You guys going to tune in?
Yeah,
okay.
For sure.
Raleigh, James Wood.
I'll take the Buxton.
You're going to take Byron?
I'm going Byron.
I'm going to throw a little $10 square.
Look at Brent Rooker.
Okay.
Okay, we each got our guy.
So Rooker, Buxton, Wood.
None of them are winning.
That's exactly
that. Matt Olson. Yeah. +800, the hometown guy.
Yeah.
Who's not the hometown guy.
O'Neill Cruz.
Somebody says, what if they're planting Karens in the crowd to show the refs learn what it's like? I don't hate that. But I don't think they were.
No,
that's
not
the
doing
problem.
That, yeah.
Hey, we got an announcement for you tomorrow. You want to listen to the show tomorrow. Plus, we got Denny Matthews later on in the week because that man's getting married. So we bring Denny Matthews in studio on Thursday for all of you to enjoy. But go do something nice for somebody. You never know. It could change their day, their week, their month, their year. Simply cool to care. Kansas City, stay kind, stay safe. Cody, Golden, Drew coming up next from 10 to 2.